They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax, and joining us today, we have Bill Davis from Austin, Texas. Bill, thank you so much for joining us today. We always have a whole lot to talk about. There's so much going on, and I know you have your pulse on what's happening across the country, and especially what's happening in your neighborhood. So I'm going to turn it over to you and let you tell us about phony HOAs and CAI and all the other phony stuff that's going on.
Fantastic, Sue. It's great to be back. Thank you for inviting me. And I've really enjoyed having an opportunity to discuss some of these crazy things going on in this industry and what they do to homeowners and all the property in these subdivisions. You asked about the phony HOAs. I recently was engaged to represent a family. They got sued by something claiming to be an HOA, and it insisted that it could enforce restrictive covenants, and it was seeking a temporary injunction and a number of other things against his family. And before I even took over representation, I looked to see where the pick a guess at the name of the HOA, and I looked at where the family lived, and I went to the Secretary of State to see, you know, who the president and everything else was and where he lived. Well, the president's right next door, so I knew immediately what the problem was. And the homeowner, by the way, you know, you constantly hear about HOAs preserving property values, which is the most ludicrous thing it's one of the most ludicrous things I've ever heard. There's certainly no empirical evidence to support it, but one thing that was interesting is this client had remarked to me, there's nothing that brings property values down faster than living next to an HOA board member.
That's true.
And, I had never heard that before, and I thought that was, I thought, it's true, and it's funny. But a little more investigation, turns out this wasn't the HOA. This was a bunch of really pitiful old men who formed an organization that had the same name as the HOA that had long been defunct and had been going around deceiving all their neighbors that the organization that they were directors and officers was actually was the HOA, and they've been doing this for a very long time. And amazingly, there's not really anyone else that gets on the board. These same circle of people have been involved with this organization for many, many, many years. And not only do they file lawsuits on behalf of the faux HOA, I call it the phony HOA, FOA. They actually go around leaning people's homesteads and other properties. So I'm looking forward to this one being a rather interesting litigation, and I don't think it's going to stop with them losing. I think the board members of this organization who created it, knowing full well that it wasn't the HOA, and going around suing their neighbors, putting injunctions on people against the use of their property, leaning their property, that's fraud.
And Bill, you say that it's a defunct HOA, so who are you going to sue if there's no HOA? You're going to go after the board members individually, or?
Well, what happened is these individuals formed a different corporation and then told, with a name very similar to the old defunct HOA. Then they told everybody it was the HOA, but it's not. And so that entity is what actually sued my clients, and we counterclaimed against it. We'll be adding some more counterclaims over time when they respond, or they're probably not going to respond to discovery, but we will be adding more claims. But there is a corporate entity that is run by these characters that sued my client. So we counterclaimed against the entity that sued my client, but the entity that sued is not is not the HOA.
You know, I'm so glad you're involved in doing this, Bill. I am so glad you're doing this. I'm so glad that you're now representing homeowners instead of doing whatever other law that you practiced before, because we need you. And you know that I have listeners who contact me. The best thing in the world to them is that I have cloned Bill, and there's at least one Bill Davis in every state. So
honestly,
I'm not the only one.
The more people this happens to, you know, I was continually going about my practice, which was primarily patent law and engineering, before encountering, you know, in these behemoth, despicable management company organizations and a really unscrupulous law firm that just went to town trying to destroy people in the neighborhood I lived in. And, you know, they're doing this to more and more people. They used to do this primarily in economically disadvantaged areas, and they're doing it to more and more. It's affecting professionals and others of all walks of life. It's affecting legislators, the families of legislators. It's affecting, you know, judges. It's affecting people that serve on juries and their family and friends. And I'm confident that there's going to be more and more professionals determined to put these, in many cases, these guys are nothing but criminals, to put them out of business. The guys that are running this thing, until I see evidence to the contrary, I mean, to me, it looks like they're committing a crime. And, you know, they send out letters telling people they have no choice but to be mandatory members of this organization. I have to tell you, I went to a board meeting last night, and you want to hear about that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I've been dying to hear about that, because you told me a little bit about it. I'm dying to hear about it, Bill.
They conduct their meetings at a Methodist church. And I don't mean there's nothing negative about Methodist church implied by that, but just the idea that it's at a church, considering the intent and the evil in the hearts of the guys that are doing all this type of stuff, church seems a little, you know, they didn't make it quite into the church. They're in the outside annex of the church. Maybe that's their problem. But the meetings are conducted in an annex, which is a portable building. In order to get to the meeting room, which can only accommodate, one of the board members is extremely obese. The other one looks like one part of a foursome from a golf course who the other three didn't want to play with him. you just look at these guys and go, these folks are just absolutely pitiful. It would not have accommodated, really, the four board members, much less more than a couple of homeowners. I think this room could really maybe accommodate six people, maybe eight standing. Okay. At any rate, we went to get to the meeting room. You have to walk through an active, ongoing Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And I kind of felt bad. Here's these other people, you know, burying their souls in front, and we had to go straight through their meeting to get to the meeting room.
And you told me this last night. I was just absolutely that is so funny.
This isn't a one-time event. I had heard this might be the case from other people who have had dealings with these individuals. They just hadn't looked quite as deeply into the claims being made by these individuals. But we get to the meeting, and I'm there with one of my clients, and you know they guessed I was probably the attorney representing my client. Two of the board members were there, and they called the other one by a cell phone, who appeared. They announced who was present in the room with them, and they decided to adjourn the meeting. That was the end of the meeting.
That was it.
That was the whole meeting. So we'll continue attending board members. I mean, I went to go observe to see what these guys do. They send out letters to all the homeowners threatening them with liens, claiming that they have to be mandatory members of this organization. And, you know, it's pitiful because they spelled mandatory, M-A-N-D-I-T-O-R-Y. They send out these letters that just, you know, I mean, a third grader could spell better. And you just wonder how desperate these people are for respect and everything else. Nobody likes them. I got the sense of all the people I've run into that these guys are really just absolutely despised. And now people are going to be able to do something about it. I think the only friends these people have are each other. Just watching them talk to each other afterwards. But the this whole thing taking place in the parking lot in a church, it was kind of like, well, I don't know what analogy could be made, but off the top of my head, but it just seemed kind of crazy that this was happening in a room in the back of some annex of a church, and these guys had nothing but absolute evil in mind.
Maybe you could combine the two meetings, the HOA meeting and the Alcoholics Anonymous.
These guys, there's definitely some disease these guys suffer from that they enjoy threatening people, putting liens on people's property, suing them in the name of the HOA. You know, of course, this HOA is, it's not an HOA, but it is a company that they control. And they have fooled everybody into believing it's actually the HOA. And I am so looking forward to the follow-through on this. You know, there's a number of other steps we'll be taking. The board member did make one remark to me that they were not taking any action on this tonight. I assume they were referring to the litigation. And I was so tempted to, you know, have another comeback, but I simply said I was there to observe, and of course that's when they shut down the meeting. So we'll continue to attend these meetings to see what kind of representations they make to people.
Hey, Bill, what's the law in Texas? Are you allowed to record meetings? I hate to call them board meetings because when I was a board member, they were homeowner meetings, and every one of them was a homeowner meeting. We opened it up. We heard from the homeowners. We talked to the homeowners. I'm not saying that it wasn't didn't get nasty or heated, and sometimes it was standing room only. But we didn't shut them up. They had as much say in what went on during the meeting. I mean, now it's run like, you know, it's a board meeting and you're not allowed to talk, and, you know, we'll decide whether we want to hear from you, and you can have 2 minutes. You know, all of that absolute and utter nonsense.
Right. Well, I think, you know, Texas actually has some HOAs that are obligated to adhere to the Texas Open Meetings Act, and those you can record, you can do whatever you want to in them. Some of them claim they follow that act, and of course, well, if they do, then they have to allow the people to record them. This situation's a little bit different because, you know, our position is this isn't actually an HOA. They have fraudulently held themselves out to be the HOA, and as a private company, they can choose to not allow recordings or, you know, not even invite people to meetings. And in fact, the history of this thing, at one point when they were putting this phony thing together, they claimed it had no members.
We're going to rule over no one.
Right. Well, you know, the guys that put this thing together claiming it's the real HOA had, at the time they filed the incorporation papers for this one, they pointed to the incorporation papers for the actual former incorporated HOA and claimed that they wanted all of its powers. I'm like, well, so you knew that you're not the, you knew at the time that you filed these papers that you are not the HOA because you're actually referring to the, you know, the Articles of Incorporation for the prior incorporated HOA. So these guys know full well that they're not it, and yet they're going around to all their neighbors and they threaten them. I mean, they, you know, they'll claim that they represent them, and I'll have to send you a copy of this letter, Shu, because they sent, after we filed an amended answer and asserted at least a minimal counterclaim to keep them from dismissing the lawsuit. You know, in Texas, when there's a lawsuit, if one party files and there's no counterclaims, then the plaintiff can non-suit or seek dismissal of the lawsuit up to the last minute. We didn't want these guys getting away with this, so we filed at least a minimal counterclaim to keep them from being able to get the case dismissed and walking away from this. And while we conduct some discovery, but I don't remember where I was going with that. But that's where we are right now. We're waiting for them to respond to discovery. You know, their attorney has come up with the most pitiful excuses. He can.
Is the attorney an HOA attorney?
He's been representing this organization for, I don't know, around 15 years at least that we can tell. Because his name's on all the liens, and from the communications between him and my clients before they were, you know, being represented, you know, he was demanding all these attorney's fees and everything else. And we know that this happens routinely with the HOA attorneys, is they shake down the homeowners for attorney's fees, off the books of the HOA, threatening to foreclose on them, put a lien on their property, and do all this other type of stuff. I do want to point out a couple other crazy things that these guys have done. They've adopted, you know, resolutions and all these other types of things. The restrictive covenants do provide for an architectural committee elected by the homeowners, not by this you know, merry band of ne'er-do-wells to approve of plans and this type of thing for building. Well, these guys have developed a form where the architectural committee, which from what we can tell is selected by these individuals, not necessarily by the homeowners at large, and the form also requires the approval of the board members. Like, there's no provision in these restrictive covenants, and let's not forget, this isn't the HOA. There's no provision in restrictive covenants for the board to second-guess the architectural committee or to be able to veto the architectural committee's decision, even if it had been a legitimate architectural committee. And it just, when you're just collecting information up and looking at the psyche of these guys and their behavior and conduct, it just shows this absolute obsession with having to control everybody else. Among other things, their architectural committee form that these guys have put together wants the homeowner to have to submit proof of financial ability for the project. Now,
jeez,
that is that's beyond nosy. That is extremely intrusive, Shu. And keep in mind, these guys know that they're not the HOA and that the architectural committee has never had such authority in this place. They're trying to get the financials from of all their neighbors. And something else that's of interest in here is this isn't a subdivision built in 2014 or 2013, and this isn't some historical preservation neighborhood. This is a subdivision that has been being built out since the 70s, and, you know, many of the homes are showing, you know, they're 1970s homes, and they have all the wear and everything else associated with the 1970s home. And for these guys to be going around and demanding, oh, they want to walk the neighbor's property, they want to inspect everything, it's like, there's no provision for this anywhere. So I cannot wait until these guys have to explain themselves before a jury and a judge, you know.
Have you got a court date yet?
Oh, no, we're still in discovery. We haven't even finished asserting our claims. We've asserted enough to keep them from being able to unilaterally pull out, and you might guess that we're expect to hold these fraudsters responsible for their individual conduct. You know, you can't hide behind a corporation. I mean, this thing was formed for the purpose of committing fraud on all the neighbors. That's its sole purpose. I mean, it has no other redeeming quality but to try and take money from the homeowners. And
are they collecting dues, Bill?
They're collecting. They claim that they're entitled to assessments and that they will lien. And they threaten homeowners that they will lien their property if they don't pay them, and they do file liens against people's property in the name of their bogus organization.
So, oh God, how much, first of all, how much are they collecting and what are they using the money for, supposedly?
Well, we've sought financials, but the people I've spoken to, these guys have not provided financials. They simply claim that they are used to maintain the roads, which is absurd because all the roads in the subdivision are county roads, and it's actually illegal for them to do anything to those roads. So, you know, or at least unlawful. So this idea that they're, quote, maintaining the roads is another misrepresentation of the homeowners, and we don't know yet what they're doing with the money. We have some suspicions, but they're, you know, they're not borne out until we can have a little more discovery. And we are aware that one of the board members has numerous default judgments against him. It looks like debt buyer lawsuits, and he's got a lot of issues. And without delving into too many details, I mean, I haven't mentioned people's names or the name of the subdivision or anything else, but it turns out this guy, he has a history of bad conduct. That's the best way to put it, and a lot of scandal associated with it. And there's some suspicions about where this money is going, and in fact that maybe it's being used to sustain some of the board members personally. We just don't know. But what we do know is we haven't found any evidence that they are who they claim to be. We've searched diligently. We've asked them to provide it. And we'll just have to wait and see, you know, if they're going to produce it or if we have to. We'll be taking a few more steps in about a month. So I don't know what else I can say right now. But we have to wait and give them an opportunity to respond and see what they come back with. But I think the public record is going to speak for itself.
You know, some time ago, we're talking years ago, there was a story out of, and I think it was Texas, and I don't remember where in Texas, but there were some homeowners who wanted to know why nothing was being maintained, why the common properties weren't being maintained, why the landscaping was brown and dying and hadn't been, you know, there were no
gardeners, no, nothing was happening, yet they were all paying their assessments. Couldn't use the pool. The pool was green and slimy and full of mosquitoes. Just really derelict.
And they kept, like our subdivision.
they kept asking for the financials. This one homeowner kept asking for the financials of the association and was never given anything. So he did manage to convince, I don't know whether it was the attorney general for the state or whether it was, you know, one of the local municipal attorneys. But anyway, somehow he managed to badger him enough that this official attorney asked to see the financials and was told that they were lost. They couldn't find them. They couldn't find the check register. They couldn't find anything. Everything was lost. So because of who he was, he managed to go to the bank and get a copy of all of the financial information. These people, the board, had been collecting money from the homeowners and using it to finance their own businesses, their own pockets, and all of that. So in one case, you actually had some help from the real government to come and look into this. But from what you're saying, Bill, the FBI is probably going to have to go into every state and clean it up.
I think that's about the only way. I mean, the state legislature, certainly here, was just, you know, it was just downright corrupted by the people, quote, serving their constituents. They were serving them, yeah, like the main courts for dinner.
Yeah.
They weren't doing anything beneficial to them, for them. But, yeah, I think they're going to have to investigate some of these organizations and the business practices, which are pretty prevalent throughout the state by the same organizations. It's not like it's one, you know, the industry people tell you it's one isolated instance. It's like, no, they're the trade lobby group for the guys that are behind all this stuff. And they, from what I can see, they virtually all engage in the same disgusting conduct, and they have regular trade shows to encourage each other and to invite each other to engage and continue that conduct. So
I'm not sure you're going to be able to clean them up, even if FBI did go in state by state and do what they're doing in Nevada or Las Vegas anyway. Look how many years it's taken them to clean that up. But, and they haven't, they're not done yet, but they'll just come back again. I remember when I first got involved in the radio doing, not this show, but the one I did before, the mayor of New York at the time had gone through and cleaned up New York City and got rid of all the managers and all the, you know, everybody who was just robbing the association, mostly co-ops in New York, obviously, just robbing them blind. Real estate agents, managers, attorneys, anybody and everybody feeding at the trough of controlled living in New York, which is just about everybody.
Yeah.
Next year, they were back again. They cleaned them out one year. The very next year, those cockroaches were back out again.
Yeah.
Doing the same thing. So I don't know how. I guess I keep going back to the fact that you're not, this is not a workable housing plan. This just is.
Oh, you and I agree on that. It's completely not workable because it's just a constant repair and it never fixes and it's never solved. And you know the industry would like to maintain a status quo of continuing to bleed the homeowners and the organization itself by ensuring that nothing can ever get really fixed or resolved. And I do think structurally a number of things can be done, including not allowing the insurance to be tied to the management company and not allowing the board members to have the same insurance the organization has. I would like to share with you another case, which I'm happy to say just settled yesterday.
Yeah.
And yes, it's also nearby. But what we had was, I don't think I mentioned this before in the show, but what happened was is the board members and the organization were insured under the same policy, and the insurance company appointed one attorney to represent both the board members and the organization in litigation. What happened was these board members had tried to foreclose on hundreds of lots the developer had, and then they turned around, they filed one suit for that, then they filed another lawsuit, just similarly bringing up complaints about the developer. Under Texas law, the nature of the very first lawsuit, in order for it to go away, so that the issues could be resolved. It's a specialized proceeding, and the court's only not allowed to consider counterclaims or anything. The developer was required to file a separate lawsuit, which should have automatically vacated the very first lawsuit. I know that sounds like a bunch of mumbo-jumbo, but the attorney behind the HOA at that time was, caused the developer side to have to expend tens of thousands of dollars just to get the court to follow the rules it's required to follow, which is you have to dismiss the first lawsuit when the when this other lawsuit's filed. Well, this other lawsuit, the developer named the HOA as well as the individual board members who had done all this. And I know this is a lot of buildup, but here's where I'm getting to the good part, or the interesting part. The board members, the controlling interest of the board, they didn't really represent, they certainly didn't represent the homeowners, and they didn't represent even all the board. But the controlling interest of the board appointed one person to engage in settlement negotiations, and that person, what she did was the settlement proposal required, you know, of course, for the HOA to settle, in the interest of the good of the community, proposed that the developer had to give them free lifetime transfer, fully transferable memberships to the developer's golf course, which, by the way, was not in this subdivision, had nothing to do with this subdivision, which for six of the board members, which was estimated to be worth at least $500,000. And, of course, this agreement needed to be confidential. You know,
of course,
in the interest,
I hate those.
Of course, in the interest of the community. They fired the, it wasn't just to the controlling board members. It was also to the spouses of one of the board members, or the spouse of one of the board members, as well as to an employee. Well, the you know, in Texas, we did get the law changed so that the boards can no longer prevent people from voting or declare them ineligible to vote. There's still a lot of voter fraud that goes on. Don't get me wrong there. You know, they control it by who they're going to send ballots to, mm-hmm. or refusing to send people ballots, or just losing them, and in the whole counting process. But what happened was is the control of the board changed, and these board members who had were trying to hide this proposal, they weren't just hiding it from the homeowners, they were hiding it from the other board members.
Yeah.
They didn't want the other board members to know what they were doing. And anyway, with the change in control of the board, the attorney was fired. The employee who had been there about the same length of time as the attorney resigned, but apparently she spent about 2 weeks shredding documents before she resigned. I mean, I understand there was, you know...
Wow.
Shredding chaff everywhere, and the place smelled like burned paper. And so there was a lot of spoliation of the HOA's records. There is so many things I could tell you about this place, it's not even funny. But the point is, what was the point? The point is these board members, you know, they're desirous of control. It's a lot of it was about personal profit, but it just shows there were so many problems with this because the board members and the insurance, I think that's what I'm trying to get to, is the fact that the insurance was the same for the board and the HOA, the attorney, and because the insurance appointed a single attorney to represent the HOA and these board members, there was never going to be any resolution.
Yeah.
And what these board members were doing were increasing the exposure of the HOA, to which they bore no real personal liability for, while, or at least a very minimal one, while seeking to extort golf club memberships for themselves, secretly, of course. And this is the example of structural changes that need to be made, especially pertaining to insurance and representation, to prevent these kind of things from happening. And, of course, we all know that a bunch of these lawsuits, the management company is also covered and controls the insurance. You can't fire them because of the tying arrangement once they provoke a lawsuit. And they control the records, although they will hide behind that. What I find is the management companies around here will have somebody that will sign off as an alleged agent of the HOA, but they're not. They're an agent of the management company, and that capacity is not revealed. And, of course, that would illustrate bias or potential misrepresentation of the true nature of the records of the HOA, because they're not really the HOA's records. They're the records manufactured by the management company. But then they won't want to reveal that that person's a management company employee. They claim that she's a HOA person.
What's that?
Yes. And so you have, I mean, these management companies file managing agent certificates. They have to file them. They're on record, and yet they will hold out individuals as being the managing agent for the HOA when they know darn well they're not. And they'll file those documents in court. But see, it gives the impression that this is some person at the HOA that's agreeing that these fees or do, when in fact the HOA board may have no idea what the management company is doing. But I think structurally changing this, getting rid of indemnification of the management company, which all their contracts tend to provide, getting rid of the tying arrangement between the management company and the insurance, meaning that in order for you to continue the insurance, you have to employ the management company, because you can see what happens once litigation starts. You can't fire the management company that initiated all this stuff and still have coverage for the litigation, and eliminate this dual coverage of board members and the HOA itself, the HOA corporation, with the same policy. They need to have separate policy and separate representation. Because, I mean, and this one that recently settled is a perfect example. You know, you have one person claiming to represent the HOA and claiming that they represent the, quote, community, when we all know all they represented was their own self-interest, and they never represent the people that they sue, that's for sure.
No. No, they don't. No. And it's just getting where CAI's just put out a 1,000-page fact book that you can download.
1,000 pages?
Apparently it's 1,000 pages. I have not seen it. But I did look at sort of a brief description, and the sheer numbers, apparently 24% of all Americans live in one of these damn things. That's almost a quarter of the country.
Yeah. Well, it's not like it's a choice.
It's not a choice, and it's a $65 billion, with a B, annual industry. But that 24% of of people who live there, it represents 65.7 million people who are paying $65 billion.
Right.
In extra
fees. And we all know a lot of it doesn't actually go to the HOA.
Oh, no, we know. Well, none of it goes to the HOA.
Yeah.
I mean, this all goes to all of the people that feed at the trough of the homeowners.
Yeah.
And that's all they're doing, Bill. There's no real value added, because we're still paying taxes for all of the things that we're supposed to be getting.
That we don't get, either through the local government or through the HOA.
Right.
Yeah.
So now we're paying double on that, and it's just going into different pockets.
Yeah.
It's the biggest scam perpetrated against a nation. And, I mean, the horrors that we hear, I'm sure you hear from a lot of people, but I get people, Bill, they call and they're sobbing on the phone. They're crying because they're terrorized by terrorists.
Right. They're treated like cattle for slaughter. That's exactly how this industry works, is how many, you know, how much of the herd can they thin? How much can they harvest this time around? You know, can they increase the harvest? What new restrictions can they try to impose? What new charges can they impose to fatten the harvest they get off the homeowners and the HOA? That's what their trade group meetings are about. That's what their papers are about. That's what their law committee works on. And, you know, people really aren't. Yeah, there's more and more people that aren't herded to slaughter.
So what's the answer? What's the answer, Bill? What's the answer?
Well, condominiums. Present. I can't speak about co-ops because we don't really have that in this state, and so that's like an alien. There's a few of them, but that's otherwise an alien concept. That's more of a Northeast thing. Condos are a terrible problem, and they're only making it worse with this mixed-use nonsense. It's a terrible legal structure for housing. But for the regular, HOAs, I think they need to just be largely eliminated. And one easy way to do it is to just say, hey, these things, this idea that automatic renewal doesn't violate the rule against perpetuities is silly. That why don't we say they terminate unless unless the homeowners reinstate them?
Yeah, and I think you need 100% to reinstate it. I don't think one person should be able to force this regime down anybody else's throat.
Right. Even if you had an active one, not that I would promote this, but I would say even if you had a rule that said 70% of them had to approve of it within the time period before it went dead, I think you'd see a whole bunch of these things gone, because I think by and large most people do not like them. They despise them. and nobody wants perpetual liens on their property that can never be paid off. It's just absurd to suggest that somehow protects property values. It protects the value in your property for the benefit of the management company and the HOA attorney and everybody that tries to fatten up those liens with bogus charges and then extort money from you under threat of foreclosure, but it certainly doesn't do anything for the benefit of the homeowners.
No, I absolutely agree with you, but you're going to hear people say, but shoo, Bill, be realistic. You can't do away with these. Bill, people are doing away with them. You've got the Ferrans who, I mean, the association still exists, but they gutted the powers of the association.
Yeah.
So you've got some common area, and the association exists to maintain that, period. There are no architectural control committees. There are no covenants against what you can do to your property, nothing. The whole thing was just totally gutted. Then you've got people like Larry Fletcher, who was on a few weeks ago, and they looked around, and fortunately for them, their covenants were recorded in phases. Like the developer built phase one, recorded a covenant, built phase two, recorded a completely different covenant. So in their particular phase, there was absolutely no common area whatsoever. And so they were able to terminate the association. And I think there were 14, if memory serves me correctly, 14 or so lots, or 13 lots and 12 of them, or 12 lots and 11 voted to terminate it. One abstained. One lot owner abstained. He didn't have a house there, so wasn't living there. So he abstained from voting. But I think they overwhelmingly voted to get rid of it. And the key there was they kept it quiet. They didn't go talking about it. They voted. They followed everything in the governing documents. They voted accordingly. They recorded the paperwork before they let the association know. They sent the association a certified letter saying, we have terminated our association. We are no longer a part of you guys.
Right.
But, you know, nobody had anything, any clue that this was happening. They just totally blindsided them. But I talk to homeowners who think, or to people who think that they have to let the board know, and they threaten them, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that, and we're going to do... Just keep your mouth shut. If you've got the upper hand, just see it through to the end before you make any stupid announcements.
Right.
You know, don't. Well, the only thing they have going for them is the element of surprise, and if they go blabbing, they've lost that.
Well, one of the things CAI tried to do here a few years ago was for petitions to amend restrictive covenants, they tried to make it so that those petitions could only be initiated by the board. And we all know that the people attracted to those board positions, by and large, I mean, I've watched this phenomenon in the case that just recently settled. You know, when they're a victim of the HOA, they're ready for the thing to be terminated. But when they get on the board, it's got to be preserved, and it's needed. It's so necessary. We must do everything to preserve our power base.
Right.
I'm serious.
I've
watched this happen over and over again. And we all know that if you allow only the board, who doesn't really represent the homeowners, it really represents only the controlling interests of the board and their personal desires and goals, they will never try to push amendments that would kill the HOA. They only seek to create greater authority for themselves and greater restrictions over people's use of property. That's why the homeowners need to be able to be the ones to initiate actions to amend their own restrictive covenants. And fortunately, CAI was not successful in what they were trying to do. And even worse, Sue, it wasn't just CAI. It was the head of the Department of Planning for the City of Houston. The City of Houston, well, she was heavily affiliated with the Urban Land Institute, and they even had this program where they would promote, hey, we'll give you pro bono attorney assistance in drafting new deed restrictions. And, of course, these would be the deed restrictions from hell, and it would impose a mandatory HOA. And what they were trying to do is to make it so the City of Houston could basically very easily come in and force HOAs. I think I've sent you this chart before. There's a number of ways of imposing one, And one of the ways, if a person doesn't agree, then they don't have to be a member of it. So there was special legislation written for the city of Houston, essentially Harris County, that allows the creation of an HOA against your consent and to be imposed upon you years after you're there. And, of course, Beanie's been fighting that for many years out of concern. Well, they have been actively trying to do this in her subdivision, you know, put one in after the fact. And the people pushing it are the CAI folks, the realtors, who are only interested in flipping houses. You know, they're not actually trying to live there or do anything else. It's just supposed to look neat, but regardless of whether it's actually livable.
How can how can the state enact legislation that only pertains to one segment of the state? How can they force this on Houston?
They do it all the time. They do it with geographic bracketing. You know, they'll say, well, in a county with a population of excess of, you know, 2 million people or 3 million people within 150 miles from the Gulf Coast, they put in all these things that have absolutely no logical bearing to the legislation whatsoever, but it's designed to geographically bracket the thing. That, you know, they also have them for counties of a particular size, a population, you know, between X and Y. But the industry has definitely sought, at least in this state, when they couldn't get an overall change to the law, they've tried to get it implemented in geographically bracketed areas to make it easier to amend these restrictive covenants. And, of course, they're always seeking to impose ever greater restrictions, because more restrictions means more fights, more money for the attorneys, more chaos, more private fining. It's guaranteed to promote litigation and financial hardship and everything else in the homeowners, which is what these guys all prey off of and profit from. Yes?
If you could come up with just one thing that you could get initiated and started right now, right this second, what would it be in HOAs? Just to sort of return the balance of power maybe a little bit towards the homeowners. Even things out a bit.
The closest thing I could think of that would address all the industry's bogus arguments is to, and I don't know if this is what you're asking exactly, but to say you can't have a private corporation with this kind of power. We don't recognize that. What we would allow is incorporation into a local government unit, and it would have to be held to all the standards of local government, both under state law and federal law. That's going to immediately eliminate a bunch of this, you know, these ridiculous restrictions they try to impose. They're not going to get away with the hiring the private vendors. The type of things that are considered a civil matter for your own personal pursuit that these guys regularly engage in suddenly becomes a crime, and the AG will look into it, and people can serve time for it. It's a criminal offense. As opposed to a civil matter that the homeowners just have to bear themselves. And I think that could go, not that I want another unit of government, but I would rather have a legitimate government as opposed to a private rogue corporation that can do whatever it wants to people, pretending to be a government. So if I had to pick between those two, I'd rather have a legitimate government unit. Ideally, I'd rather have none. But
me too.
What's that?
I said me too.
Yeah, well, I don't see all their arguments. That, you know, they claim, oh, it's not the HOA. They make it sound like if you take away an HOA, I don't know, these cars just appear from nowhere and grow up on blocks and will be planted in everybody's, you know, yards or something like that. Look, there's nothing that says that. That's not consistent with reality.
No.
The other thing is if there's restrictions there, everyone else has a right to enforce them. You don't need a corporation whose sole job is to prey upon the people that live there. Because that's what they do. They just sue the homeowners. Many of these places are in cities and counties which have ordinances anyway. So exactly what is this all about? And who's really benefiting from it? I don't think it's the homeowners. I'm confident it's not the homeowners.
Well, I think that everybody, I mean, we've allowed HOAs to get out of control, and we've allowed them to have all of these powers because we've allowed them to scare the living daylights out of us. It's the fear factor. Again, as you mentioned, if we don't have an HOA, your neighbor's going to put his cars on blocks. Okay. If he did put his cars on blocks, I mean, he's going to need it to drive to work, but if he did put it on blocks, so what? Well, you know, so what?
You know, I just don't know where this innate urge. I don't feel an innate urge to go that, or that an HOA is preventing me from putting a car up on blocks. I don't have an innate urge to go put one up on blocks to begin with. But the HOA certainly adds nothing of value to me. In fact, it's caused a lot of financial hardships and caused a lot of money drain and it's done so to a lot of people. I see absolutely no value to it at all.
Municipalities are starting to emulate HOAs. I mean, we had someone who was being fined $500 a day for growing vegetables in his front yard. And he was growing vegetables in his front yard because that's where the sun was. There was no sun in the backyard. The neighbor's trees sort of kept his backyard in the shade, and he didn't want to go and say, hey, you got to chop down your trees. You're blocking my light. He said, okay, but there's plenty of sun in the front yard, so why don't I plant my veggies in the front yard? And so the city came by and said, oh, that's not appropriate. You're devaluing property. No, give me a break. And so it's $500 a day. Fine.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the things that Houston has tried is they call it their parking ordinance, parking on, I can't remember exactly what it's called off the top of my head, but basically they do not have the ability as a city to adopt a criminal ordinance prohibiting you from parking on an unimproved portion of your lot. Okay, so what they did is they adopted an ordinance that allows them to enforce a resolution by the HOA to prohibit you from parking on an unimproved portion of your lot. And you know, people can say, hey, that sounds hickish, or we wouldn't want to have that at any rate. But if you think about it, these are people that had use and enjoyment of their property as a matter of right, and you've got a city that is trying to impose a criminal ordinance. It's $100 a day. It's a Class C misdemeanor. Each day is a different occurrence. On something that's actually not a crime and never has been a crime, and they're not able to adopt an ordinance that makes it uniform to the whole populace. So what they do is they go to these HOAs and say, hey, we'd like you to adopt this resolution, and suddenly people that are in an HOA can be facing a criminal offense if they have a car parked on something other than a driveway or the street. And again, I realize that thought terrifies some people, but the reality is, these people had every right to do that for, you know, since the invention of the car. And there's a lot of older places in Houston that have a dirt driveway or things like that. That's an unimproved portion of the property. That suddenly that is a criminal offense, and it only applies to them. It doesn't apply to people in the subdivision that doesn't have an HOA next door, or to the other citizens of the City of Houston. I mean, you're truly a third-class citizen in these places, even worse, a non-citizen. I am a little curious about this book put out by CEI. Have you noticed that they just seem so desperate to keep trying to convince everybody that the, I mean, first of all, it's not like you have a choice. There's nothing but HOA housing that's been manufactured for decades in many places, and that's all, at least around here, that the county and city will allow to be built. Or approved for building through their planning process. So this idea that the industry has to actually market these things is kind of silly, because you don't have it's not like the population has a choice. But to me, it's sort of a sense of desperation.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm just not familiar with other parts of the country. But why do you have to keep talking about what great places these are? It's not like people have a choice.
Well, in one of my promos that I wrote some time ago, I asked the musical question, why is it that CAI keeps coming up with these polls every 2 years? Is it because they don't believe the responses? That 98% of the people are happy, 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 and even CAI doesn't believe that, so they have to keep coming up with new polls to confirm that. It's just absolutely insane. Who believes this nonsense? Are they trying to convince themselves?
Well, and you notice that they no longer provide the questions for you to look at to see how. I mean, I get these very one-sided questions during campaign time that are really, you know, they're questions that one party is trying to ask prospective donors. They're really designed to incite something else, and it really talks about the other candidate.
You know, it's not an
unbiased question to gather a. It would never be a valid. Question for a survey, and of course CAI doesn't publish the questions that it's asking or what the actual answers were, anything that allows you to derive any type of validity to the propaganda that they're putting out there. So they used to put the questions out several years ago.
They did it the first time. When it was an add-on to a Gallup poll, and they actually had Gallup on there, and they had this, it was very open. They provided the questions, they provided the answers, they provided everything, and it was right there. They rented the place downtown, and they had Gallup on the phone, and they invited everyone to come down, and we actually got everything in our hands. I had it before Bob Diamond had it. I had that stuff in front of me. That group of CAI leaders is no longer there. There was a takeover. There was a changing of the guard. And you have the current group that's in there. All of a sudden, everything became very secretive, very closed. You never get the questions. They'll give you summaries. Everything is sanitized, scrubbed, to the point where it's not believable. And again, why do you need to come up every 2 years with a survey, the same survey? Is it because you don't trust your responses, or is it because those responses are not true? How many times has the phone rung and you've picked it up and they, would you take a survey? Sure, I'd be happy to. Is your favorite color yellow or red? And you go, neither one. And they go, but you have to pick one. I go, but it's not true. But you have to pick one. Do you like yellow better or do you like red better? So you give an answer based on what they want. That's called a push-pull. And my guess is that's very similar to the type of question that they come up with. It's not, what is your favorite color? And you tell them, and then they get all that information, and they put it together, and they say 98% said they like blue better. That, then you'll have something that's credible and believable. But when it's, you've got to pick one of these, you don't have an option. Your favorite color is either red or yellow.
I did notice they changed the surveying organization again. I guess maybe one of the reasons is the entity performing the survey has to worry about its own reputation after a while. This is, I can't remember who it was before.
Zogby.
What's that?
Zogby. Zogby did it.
Well, they did the previous ones. They didn't do this latest one.
Yeah.
They mentioned somebody else, and I kind of thought, well, maybe Zogby was worried about his reputation after a while. I mean, it affects enough people that they know better. I mean, you still get the ignorant people that actually buy into this myth that it somehow preserves value, even though, you know, you look at it and go, let's see here, perpetual liens, you can never be paid off. Whatever debt the HOA racks up, your house is security for it. You have to get permission from people that, or management companies that have absolutely no, I mean, it's all directed towards collecting fees and things from you. It has absolutely nothing to do with architectural nature or engineering standards or anything else. It's just about, you know, control over you. That improves my property values. I can't tell you how it's just shot to the roof because these anonymous people that have no accountability to anybody somehow have control of my property. That just, boy, I can't tell you how much that's improved my property values.
And on that note, Bill, we're going to have to go. We're way over our time. But thank you so much for joining me. Always love having you here, Bill. Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO.
Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.